confetti and the fireworks.
It's less than a year since Italy was rejoicing as their football team lifted the World Cup in Germany. But things quickly soured, with a string of violence from hardcore fans ruining the image of the country's beautiful game.
All Italian football in Serie A and B have been suspended following the death of a policeman in Sicily.
I got a belt to the back of the head, I stumbled, and as I turned round, I just felt this almighty pain in my groin. And then I looked down my leg and the blood was pumping out of it.
In this documentary, we investigate why police and fans are being regularly attacked at matches, and we'll look at what's being done to prevent it, as we delve into the murky world of the ultra. After several high-profile incidents this year, much has been said about the Italian ultra in the press. But how well do we know what they stand for? John Foote is the author of Calcio, the English language history of what the Italians call football. And his definition doesn't include them being violent.
An ultra is an organised fan who lives a lot of his life through football. That is, it's one of the key things in his life. It's usually a he. I'm using he because I think it almost is a he, always is a he. So it's a male atmosphere. It's a way of seeing the world. It's a way of organising a certain group of youth. They grew up in the 70s and then have transformed and changed over time. But it's also a business now, and I think that's very important. A business which is to do with merchandising, tickets, control and power. An ultra has a sense of power. They like to make their voices heard. They like to be seen on the press. They like to show banners. They're more interested in some ways in themselves than they are in the actual football game.
It's these elements that mean the passions on the terraces run high. Giorgio Triani is a sociologist from the University of Verona who's published studies on football fans, and he believes it's this aspect which best defines an ultra.
La sua partecipazione è totale, intensa.
An ultra is someone who's extremely passionate, someone who participates totally and intensively in the game. In Italy, we use the word tifoso for a fan that comes from the word tifo, meaning typhus, the terrible disease. The ultra is someone who suffers from a disease.
During the 70s and 80s, it was the British who were said to be diseased, with countless acts of hooliganism blighting the national game. Comparisons to the ultras have often been made, but as John Foote points out, the Italians have a different motive for their fighting.
Violence is, for the ultra at least, is a means to an end. It's an organised activity, and unlike the hooligans, for example, in Britain in the 80s, 70s and 80s. So it's a way of achieving something, and therefore it's in some ways more scary than in other countries in the sense that it's used instrumentally.
So what exactly are they looking to achieve?
Well, it may be political visibility. It may be that they are looking to achieve power within the club or reinforce the power in the club, such as tickets, such as control over the stadium, such as being able to get rid of certain players that they don't like. So the whole series of things which will change over a season or over years. And that's the violence is used in extreme circumstances to achieve that. It's not always in that case. I think there's also a thing of violence for violence sake, but that's a much smaller part than in, for example, the British hooligans.
So what kind of society forms these type of people? Paddy Agnew, an Irish journalist based in Rome, thinks that the ultras reflect the current crisis Italy finds itself in.
Football simply reflects the society in which it's played. And Italy's a country that, to my mind, is in economic, cultural, political, social crisis. It's suffering from a major identity crisis in the sense that you've got an economy which isn't performing as well as it did perform in the boom years of the 60s. You've got a culture which has lost the traditional Catholic family values that can hold a society together and hasn't really replaced them with anything other than a mixture of Big Brother and football matches.
In this context, the ultras choose to match their extreme actions with extreme symbols. Stadiums have been filled with flags of Mussolini and swastikas on one hand, to images of Stalin and Che Guevara on the other. But as John Foote reminds us, this is only natural in a country which still upholds radical political beliefs.
Italy is a very politicised society. Politics is everywhere. So it would be ridiculous for politics, football, to be out of politics. No one would realise that would happen. So it's clearly everything that happens in Italy is political. The hardcore political aspects of the ultra culture have definitely been there since the 70s. And then certain political groups have used the curva, the ends of the football grounds, the ultra, as recruiting grounds. And that's particularly the far right and particularly groups like Forza Nuova and the neo-fascist groups.
The most famous example of a club whose ultras are influenced by right-wing philosophy is Lazio from Rome. Their hardcore ultras, the Irriducibili, have been known to display anti-Semitic and racist banners, and they even revere the Serbian warlord Arkan. John Foote explains how this all came about.
Lazio was Mussolini's team. It was a right-wing team. It's also a social question in the sense that Lazio fans tend to be from outside Rome, not from the more culturally mixed, perhaps more left-wing areas of centre of Rome. And then they, hardcore ultra identity has been come to be identified with that fascist tradition, racist tradition, anti-Semitism and so on. So the origins of it are somewhat murky, but it clearly became part of the identity of Lazio from the 70s. And you can see it in all through the 70s, swastikas, Celtic crosses, identification with right-wing politics, identification with certain players, particularly the team of the 70s who were already right-wing, and then Paolo Di Canio in recent years.
The former ultra himself, Paolo Di Canio, couldn't resist a transfer from Charlton Athletic back to his hometown club in the summer of 2004. But it didn't take long until the political beliefs of the former West Ham player got him in trouble. After scoring a penalty in the 2005 Rome derby against arch-rivals AS Roma, Di Canio was pictured making a fascist salute towards the Lazio end. He repeated the gesture that year against Livorno and Juventus, but Di Canio thinks that the media's coverage of his actions was overblown.
The Italian media sometimes exaggerate in something, and this moment in Italy there are lots of problems, and they want to move the attention with something that is not really important, something that is a person like me that say hi to other people, but nothing more. So I never say that I'm anti-Semitic or racist. The people know me in England, that my best friend there were people, black people. In every team I had played, like West Ham, Charlton, I have a good friendship with lots of black guys. So I don't know why in Italy they want to show Paolo Di Canio like a monster.
Di Canio has now left Lazio. But when I visited this season's home game against Chievo with my translator, it didn't take us long to find some ultras who still idolise him.
Di Canio è nostro simbolo.
Di Canio is their idol, their symbol.
And what was it like when Di Canio played here?
Due anni ci ha giocato Di Canio a Roma, che ne so quanti intendi con le partite.
Stupenda, stupenda.
Elettrizzante, dire. Bello, beautiful, che ne so. Come si dice bella?
Very good, very good.
Spectacular atmosphere.
Blue is the color, football is the game, SS Lazio.
We never walk alone, perché la Lazio non so se rim, e per sempre canterim, la Lazio!
These fans have been in fights before, but it's important to note that trouble normally only flares up when long-standing rivals play each other. The Rome derby is one such occasion. But when I visited this grudge match, it seemed at first as if the event may pass off peacefully for once.
Now the atmosphere here in the Lazio end with the flags and the songs and the jumping up and down has been electric. And it's got even so far as the one guy who's climbed up on the plastic perimeter fence down below me and is doing the Paolo Di Canio style Roman salute every time Lazio go on the attack or a decision goes against them. Now, although they're banned, we did hear at the beginning of the first half plenty of firecrackers being set off, sending a shudder throughout this entire end of the stadium. But saying that, the atmosphere seems pretty friendly for such an intense game with such a violent history. And outside the stadium, there was a heavy police presence which maybe quelled any potential violence.
Unfortunately, I was speaking too soon, and the encounter did start to live up to its terrible reputation once I got outside, where old battles were being renewed.
Well, I've just got off the bus from the Olympic Stadium, and as I was waiting for it, there was a bit of a scuffle that emerged on the road outside the stadium with a group of about 20 men trying to chase someone across the road. One of them had a massive iron bar, but the group dispersed and I couldn't quite see where they went. A few minutes later, though, as I got on the bus, we went past this group again and they'd finally caught whoever they were chasing. It looked like it was Roma fans who had instigated the fight, and one of them was bashing this man over the head repeatedly with a motorcycle helmet. So although it was only on a very small scale, we can say that once again the Rome derby has seen an episode of violence.
The police confirmed later that evening that four of their officers were injured, and three Lazio fans and an Englishman were being treated in hospital for stab wounds. Another one of Lazio's bitter rivalries is with Livorno, a team from the coast of Tuscany. Their ultras are notorious for their left wing, or even Stalinist leanings, making them the polar opposite of Lazio's fascist element. Once again, the genesis of these beliefs is rooted in local history, as John Foote explains.
Livorno has always been a left-wing city, a subversive city, an anti-authoritarian city. And you can see that in any political or historical study of Livorno will reveal that to you. And that's been reflected in all kinds of aspects of life. And the Livorno hardcore fans have always been extremely left-wing. And in 1999, there was a group formed called the BAL, who wanted to use the Curva as a way of expressing a kind of Stalinist politics, almost a throwback to the 30s in some ways, or the 40s, using big pictures of Stalin, Che Guevara. It's a mixture of symbols and also very provocative.
One ultra who displays these icons is Lenny Bottai. He was the spokesperson for the now disbanded BAL group of ultras, and his violence has seen him been banned a record 5 times from watching football. For him, waving flags of Che Guevara is a way of protesting against the current political regime.
Sono ad oggi bandiere scomode. Se non è scomodo riabilitare Mussolini e il fascismo, può essere scomodo.
Those were provocative flags, and I did annoy people. For them, it's fine to rehabilitate Mussolini and fascism, but it's pretty annoying remembering that poor workers like us owing their freedom to the politics of the Soviet Union. Nowadays, nobody carries flags of contemporary political parties in the stadium. Politicians, journalists, and critics should think about the reason why it's like this. It's probably because politicians speak a language young people don't understand. Can you imagine a stadium full of image of politicians like Tony Blair? They don't inspire it that much. We need revolutionary ideas, which some people have tried to eliminate.
Tony Blair oppure Di Mastella. Queste persone non hanno ispirato.
He may have once single-handedly attacked a bus full of Sampdoria fans and been in his fair share of fistfights, but Lenny doesn't classify this as violence.
Allora, il concetto di violenza e non violenza è...
The concept of violence is quite old, and it depends on what you think violence is. Violence is abusing someone is weaker. I don't think that is a fistfight outside the stadium or at school, it's actually being violent. Multinationals that use and underpay people for third world countries, that's what I think violence is. Economical prevarication, racism, sexism are violence generated by society, not a fist fight outside the stadium.
Il fatto che ci siano delle multinazionali che sfruttano e che sottopagano il terzo mondo.
BAL group made large efforts preparing extravagant banners, choreographies and firework displays in the stands, especially when they face Lazio. Lenny describes why this game is so special.
L'attenzione durante un Lazio-Livorno.
When Lazio play Livorno, the attention is focused not only on the players, but on the supporters too. I mean, there is a kind of game within the game. and this second game is played by supporters. There is a show which takes place on the terrace, and the supporters are the main characters.
La cornice quanto diventa protagonista la stazione.
It's this desire of the ultras to be in the media spotlight which has produced a legacy of violence and at least 12 football-related deaths. Italy thought it had seen it all, but when Catania lost the Sicilian derby against Palermo in February, their fans went on the rampage. And then this happened.
An Italian policeman has been killed during riots at a football match in Sicily. Around 100 supporters were injured during last night's disturbances. There'll be no matches in the country until further notice.
The victim, 38-year-old Filippo Riciti, died through severe liver injuries sustained during the fighting. This sent shockwaves through the game, with all matches in the country being suspended for a week. It also made the authorities realise that the current anti-hooliganism law not only needed to be properly enforced, but also strengthened. Catania were ordered to play the rest of their season's home games behind closed doors in a neutral venue. Unsafe stadia, including Milan's famous San Siro, were closed to the public whilst they were forced to hurriedly modernise their facilities. The new law, which was written by Interior Minister Giuliano Amato, also targeted the ultras. The use of controversial banners, rockets, smoke bombs and firecrackers at sports events was banned, as was the block selling of tickets to fans for away games. These new measures seemed tough. And on the day the Italian Parliament finally ratified them, Manchester United fans were gathering in Rome for their Champions League quarter-final against Roma. The ink had barely dried on the so-called Amato decree, but it didn't take long for these new laws to be broken. Manchester businessman Stephen Fitzsimons was walking to the game with a group of friends when they were ambushed by Roma ultras.
I got a belt to the back of the head. I stumbled. I knew straight away we were in trouble then. First thing I did was put my hand up to the back of my head to make sure I hadn't been cut and there was no blood. I got to my feet, sort of got myself ready. I turned round and it was nothing but pure Italian ultra fans. The next thing I remember, I grabbed Mike, my mate, because he was sort of in front of me, grabbed him by the shoulders and threw him to one side, back towards the cars. I then turned round and grabbed young Steve and threw him over to the left. And as I turned round, I just felt this almighty pain in my groin. I fell down in between two cars and sort of back onto the pavement. And when I looked down onto my groin, the blood was pumping out of my leg. Next of all, I heard two out, and I knew straight away, I recognised them voices, and I knew it was Mike and young Steve. And then I looked down my leg and the blood was pumping out of it, so I tried to put a bit of pressure on it. I think then the ultras by then had dispersed it and gone somewhere else. And I'm shouting, get ambulances, get ambulances. The ambulances came. After that, I can just remember hearing the paramedic screaming down the microphone. I knew then it was serious when the sirens went on. They took me into hospital, took my details, etc., cut my clothes off, and then brought me straight into the operating theatre. And when I looked down, I had a tube sticking out of my groin, which at that time I thought, this is actually serious, this, you know, and really scared for my life here, and then like I was when they approached us. I asked him what the tube was for, and he said nothing to panic about, it was just to drain the interior bleeding off. I said okay, yeah, fine. They stitched it up, bandaged it all up, and sent me back to the ward. Within 15 minutes up on the ward, being nosy, I just had a look down on my groin, and next of all, the blood was still trickling out of me outside the wound. Pressed for the alarm button, they came in. All hell let loose. Everybody was running here and everywhere. Back down to the operating theatre. The doctor said to me, you're a lucky man. He said, I had another 2 centimetres. He said, you wouldn't have made the hospital.
And how did you feel at that point?
Absolutely gutted. Absolutely gutted. I was really, really scared.
Whilst Mr. Fitzsimons and his friends were struggling for their lives in hospital, they were unaware that things were turning sour inside the stadium too.
But the police have now gone into the Manchester United fans. There is serious trouble inside the Olympic Stadium in Rome tonight. There's fighting going on between the police and United supporters. And you wouldn't want to be amongst that.
Good morning. European football's governing body will today consider a familiar problem, violence in Italy. Rome fans attacked English supporters and the police are accused of being heavy-handed too.
They just went wild. They were using their batons, they were kicking people. It was just mayhem.
These seemingly indiscriminate beatings shocked the British media, but barely warranted a mention in the Italian press. The old hooligan reputation may have gone before the Manchester United fans that night, but local ultras have received similar treatment on numerous occasions. This has led some of them, such as Lazio fan Luigi, to turn their attention to the police.
Contro la polizia.
I've seen violence against the police, stone fights, tear gas, cars and tree burnings. It's not fun against each other, but it's fun against the police.
La polizia. Contro la polizia.
But when I asked the National Secretary of the Italian Police, Michele Alessi, if their presence inside grounds causes hostilities, he begged to differ.
Beh, no, intanto negli stadi credo che la
police in the stadia do not encourage violence. The Italian police are the one of the most organized, modern and democratic police forces in the world. Therefore, I believe that the problem of violence in the stadia is a political problem. It's a problem that has to be faced by the football clubs, the police, the government and the political parties. Football clubs must contribute to isolate violent episodes and violent people in an increasingly pragmatic way. Citizens must have the right to go to the stadium with their family and kids and enjoy watching the football game, not worrying about violence.
Devono contribuire in maniera più concreta a isolare il tifo violento.
But Stephen Fitzsimons thinks that the police could have done much more when the Manchester United fans were beaten up outside Rome's Olympic Stadium.
Outside the ground, United fans were attacked by Roma fans, again with bottles, chains, belts, umbrellas, and the Italian police just stood there and watched it. Now, that I definitely know, because two of the reporters who interviewed me at my hospital bed had told me what happened, and he'd actually lost a £4,000 camera, and he reported it to the police, and the police just went, go away, go away.
The combination of these tragic events came at the worst possible time for the Italian FA. The troubles in Rome occurred just days before the Italians were due to present their bid to host the 2012 European Championships. The country was the front-runner going into the decision in Cardiff, but when UEFA President Michel Platini opened the magic envelope, Italy's name was not inside.
L'organisation de l'Euro, de l'UEFA Euro 2012... est attribué à Pologne-Ukraine.
Well, after confidently predicting yesterday that Italy would easily win the right to host Euro 2012, the country's sports press has been forced to eat a huge dose of humble pie this morning. Locals have woken up to find the decision to take the tournament to Poland and Ukraine dominating the front pages of the three main sports publications here. The Milan-based Gazzetta dello Sport has a picture of the president of the Italian FA, Giancarlo Alberti, head in hands over the headline, Italy, slapped in the face. The Rome-based Corriere dello Sport uses similar language, whilst Tutto Sport from Turin cries, Italy, what a shame, a crushing defeat. Giancarlo Alberti maintained that Italy's violence and ongoing match-fixing scandal had not influenced what he called a political decision by UEFA. Without Euro 2012 to plan towards, promised stadium renovations and the cleaning up of Calcio began to look precarious again. On his return to Rome, though, the president of the Italian FA assured me that these changes will still occur.
Beyond the negative result of Italian's bids to host Euro 2012, We have to now focus our attention on safety and start to conceive the functionality of Italian stadium in a different way. The disappointment we felt must not stop our effort from creating stadia for family, stadia which can be perceived in a positive way and that can offer a relaxing and secure place to watch game.
Adeguato a livello familiare, che venga percepito nel modo positivo e che dia quei margini di tranquillità, di sicurezza.
Abete also wishes to follow the example England set after 96 Liverpool supporters were crushed to death in the Hillsborough Stadium disaster in 1989. The Taylor Report, which followed this tragedy, demanded that all stadia in the top two leagues should become all-seater. This ushered in a renaissance in English football, and the safety and hooliganism problems of the previous two decades receded. But Paddy Agnew has heard this kind of talk from the Italian FA before, during his 22 years in Italy.
They say that on the one hand, but I was at a seminar about 18 months ago, organised by the British Embassy here in Rome, on all the problems related to violence, corruption, match fixing, and racism in football. And Italian Football Federation official after official said what I just said, that England is the role model. And afterwards then I was talking to somebody who I won't embarrass them by naming, but a senior English FA official whose job was, who was particularly one of the experts on dealing with crowd problems. And I said to him, has anybody in the Italian Football Federation ever actually picked up the phone and rung you and said, no, how do we do this, how do we do that? He said, no, we never hear from them. Because I think Italians feel that at the end of the day, even though they say that England is the model and we'll try and do that, they don't actually, they believe that they can resolve it themselves in their own way.
Whilst it's clear that Italy needs to do something radical to stamp out ultra-violence, most fans I spoke to vehemently oppose the Italian FA's approach. Ashley Young is from an organisation called Progetto Ultra, which mediates with the ultras to achieve a more peaceful future. He feels that the Amato decree goes too far.
I think that prohibiting banners, choreographical elements, just prohibiting people from going to a game because it's an away game or it's dangerous, I don't even think that's anti-hooligan, it's anti any football fan. It affects everybody, it affects the atmosphere in the stadium. If you go to a football stadium right now, it's actually sad. It's even sadder than it was before, and that was already quite a high point. One thing is preventing violence and trying to limit it. Another thing is actually just destroying football fan culture as the way it's always been in Italy. I think that would really be a shame, and we're working to try and prevent that.
But continual episodes of violence in the game are causing some fans to steer clear of going to matches. Despite being the president of the Livorno fan club, Curzio Gallottolo refuses to travel to certain fixtures.
Noi a Roma non ci andiamo.
We bring our family to games, and we don't go to Rome anymore since they waited for us with Molotov cocktails, risking our life for a game. I don't think so.
La vita non mi sembra il caso.
With match attendances having fallen every year since 2000, the question still remains of how best to entice fans such as Mr. Gallottolo back to the game. John Foote thinks that the ultras may have to accept these new laws if Italian football is finally going to save itself.
A lot of the atmosphere will change, and I think in some ways that's a price, unfortunately, Italian football might have to pay. It's a price English football had to pay. I think that's probably the only way forward, and probably a lot of the ultra won't go anymore. But you may get a lot of the other people who aren't going to stadium anymore going back, because a lot of the people don't go because the ultra go. But I think it will be sad if the atmosphere goes, and I think there's a lot of Italian football, the passion of the fans may well have to be sacrificed.